Are you in the middle of a build or planning to go tiny? Subscribe to our newsletter for monthly resources that cover all aspects of tiny living. Whether you need help choosing a rig, creating your ideal solar setup, or finding places to park, we've got you covered. Click the link in the description and subscribe today.
Welcome back to the Tiny Home Tours Podcast.
The tiny house made me feel in my body this thing that I think I always understood, which is that there are no rules.
Like, you're literally living in the moment. I know it's a cliche saying, but living this lifestyle consistently puts me in that mindset.
It's about keeping all of the things that matter to you and letting everything else go.
I've been scared a lot of times, but I jump anyways, I guess. You have to jump.
Join us each week as we share stories, wisdom, and practical tips from those who choose to have less and live more.
Hi guys, this is Allie, and today I am sitting down with Brenda from The Road Through My Eyes. Thank you so much for joining us today, Brenda.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited. It's my first official podcast, so
yay!
You know how it goes.
I promise we'll be really gentle.
Excellent.
So Brenda has been in her van for a long while now, and we're going to be chatting with her today about investing and how that has kind of shaped her ability to stay on the road. And she's also just incredibly knowledgeable about these things. So I appreciate you sitting down with us. We're going to start with our fun little icebreaker that we always do, two truths and a lie. So Brenda, go for it. As it pertains to van life, what are your two truths and a lie?
Okay. My two truths and a lie are, I have never had a Planet Fitness membership for showering. I've never been east of Iowa in my van, and I've never been knocked on by the cops.
Those are really good ones. I know you don't have a shower.
Nope.
I don't think it's Planet Fitness. Have you never gone east?
I have actually, that one is true. I have never been east of Iowa in the van. The lie is that I've never been knocked on by the cops.
Never been knocked on by the cops. You have been knocked on by the cops.
Yeah.
Where were you knocked on by the cops?
I've only once to move, and it was on the Oregon coast, and it was at like 6 a.m. And he was so nice. He was just like, if you could just move before people wake up and start walking their dogs, that would be great. I won't write you a ticket. I was like, no problem. And then, yeah, I've had like security guard here and there, but nothing too dramatic.
But that's awesome.
I'm pretty sure everybody has a cop knocking story.
I think it's kind of like how, like, it's your introduction to van life, right? Like,
yeah.
I've had a cop knock on my door, so now I am a van lifer.
Yeah, you're doing something wrong, so you're doing it right.
So how did you get into van life? How long have you been on the road? What are some of the wins, the challenges along the way? I know you've been doing this for a while, so you have a lot of good insight.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I've been living in my van for about 4 years now, but my whole journey kind of started back in 2018 is when I got the itch for it. I was actually in Australia in Byron Bay, which is a big like hippie surfing town. It's the first time that I saw people living out of the back of their vans. And I was like, that looks really, really awesome. And I actually had a couple friends doing it at the time from high school. And one of them was super inspiring. He was a doctor and he was living in his van to pay off his medical loans, which is hundreds of thousands of dollars, right? And they had the little like paper rings that you make at Christmas time. And every time they paid off $1,000, they'd get rid of a paper ring. And so you could just watch their debt going down by living in the hospital parking lot. And I thought that was so cool, like the financial benefits of it. So I actually gave my job notice back in 2018 that I was going to quit and live in the van. And I couldn't work remotely at the time. And they ended up offering me to move to Australia instead. So that kind of put a little blip in it. And I went to Australia for a couple years. But then when COVID hit and I wasn't able to travel and experience this country, I flew back. And literally, I think it was 2 days after I got back in the States, I bought this van. So I've been gung-ho on it ever since. Yeah, 4 years.
4 years. Which, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wild. I think I was like kind of mentally planning a year, maybe two, but I'm just loving it and don't really see a end in sight. So we'll see. But
so don't really see an end in sight after 4 years. That's amazing. And that's a true testament to how amazing this lifestyle can be if you kind of allow it to be awesome opportunities.
Yeah. And I think, you know, how you live it dictates how long you can do it, basically. I'm very much a like sit in one place, dwell kind of a person rather than on the go, trying to see all the national parks, you know, go, go, go. So it's just more like a lifestyle to me rather than an experience, I guess. But that is, I know you ask about the challenges or the wins or whatever. The challenge definitely is like decision fatigue and always like no stability, I guess, that you're always moving. You don't have a place to call home ever. You don't know where you're going to park every night. That does get a little tiring. And again, it's another reason that often I sit in a place for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever is allowed.
You can't grow roots in a place like so many people do. You've got to go grow roots internally, like in your soul. And it kind of gives you like a really defined compass and true north, you know?
Yeah. It's a lot of internal searching. And like you said, you don't have community, or you have to make special effort to create a community, or, you know, travel to see them, or you don't see them every Tuesday night at bingo or whatever, you know, like a normal lifestyle.
So we're talking about investing today. Brenda's talked a lot about this on her personal page, which is why I really wanted to record this with her. I know specifically for women, maybe I'm the only one, but I don't think that I am. A lot of us are completely terrified and lacking any knowledge around investing. You know, I tell my kids often that I didn't even know like the danger of credit cards, because we were kind of the first generation that they were throwing credit cards at us when we went to college. And I didn't understand interest and debt. And I racked up 15 grand all by my lonesome. And then was like, wait, why is it going up?
Yeah.
I have really had to buckle down and, you know, get that paid off. And it was a really good lesson. And so I did that. And now I'm, you know, very aware of my debt, but investing still feels very far out of reach. So how and when did you get interested in investing in finance?
Yeah. Great question. A totally relatable story. Like, it is a big failure in our education system that we're not taught how to make a budget, how to make an income sheet, how to invest, like the basics of survival in the financial world. And that it is such a taboo topic. It is incredibly sad. And I am very passionate about trying to change that, as uncomfortable as it is to talk about sometimes, especially in specific figures or whatever. Like, I think everybody needs to work on it being a more comfortable conversation. And I guess that is the core of where my passion for it started. Was one of my best friends, Kelly. She was a college friend. She got really into it back in 2019 is when she started learning and started talking to me about it. We were, Facebook messaging every day, just chatting. And she would start telling me about her investments and what she's learning and, her goals and all of that. And I obviously started to get interested in asking more questions and learning more. And I literally owe it 100%, 8,000% to her that she inspired me and has changed my future, because she was willing to approach the taboo topic and talk to her friends about their financial independence. And so I am trying to continue her legacy of, you know, passing it forward, of being comfortable talking about it with friends and trying to help friends as best I can. I obviously want to say that I am not a financial advisor or an investor, professional or anything. So everybody needs to do their own research and figure out what works best for them. But I'm happy to talk about what is working for me and what feels comfortable and safe and prosperous to me. And I just think that is a very important conversation that we should all have with our friends and family.
Totally. I really appreciate that. I was raised that way, that you don't talk about money. And
yep,
it was probably part of the reason that I got into trouble. It was just something we didn't really address. And so I really appreciate, because of that, I know a lot of people feel that way. So I extra appreciate you sitting down and talking about this today. And hopefully we can break the taboo for a lot of people who are maybe raised like I was.
Yep.
So what should people be doing in their day-to-day life around budgeting, and how does that play into investing? I know for me, like, I continually have to adjust my life I have to adjust my budget based on my life circumstances. So like during the school year, life is more affordable, and then all of a sudden summer hits and summer camps are insane. I have twins, so it's double. And and so the first summer I wasn't prepared for that and ended up having to like put it on my credit card and pay it off. I got it paid off in just a few months. I learned my lesson.
Amazing.
The first time.
Good job.
But now they're 8 years old. So I've had time to learn, and I prepare, and I, you know, start saving at Christmas time so that when I need to start signing them up for summer camp, I've got the money and savings and it's ready to go. So what are other ways? Like what should we be doing in our day-to-day lives?
Yeah, love it. Love it. That is something I wanted to touch on. So I'm glad you started there. But yeah, budgeting is like the first step of all financial knowledge, right? You have to know how much you're making and how much you're spending. So I always recommend starting with an income statement, which is just that. It's revenue minus expenses. So revenue is all your income. Normally you want to subtract out your taxes because that's you can't affect taxes. It is what it is. So whatever is left from taxes. And then I always split up my expenses into three categories. So you've got your bills, which are kind of non-negotiables. Most of the time it's auto withdrawn from your account. So it's your insurance, your rent, your cell phone bill, your insurance, et cetera. That's just automatically taken out. You can't really impact that. The next one is your essentials. So like groceries and gas and those kind of just living expenses, that they are what they are. But in order to figure out what they are, like try to imagine what you spend every grocery trip and then how many times a month you go to the grocery store, and that will figure out what your monthly budget for groceries is. Same with gas. How much does it cost to fill up your tank of gas? How often do you do it? Just start writing these things down in a spreadsheet. I'm a nerd. Do a spreadsheet.
I love spreadsheets. They're really sexy.
Love spreadsheets. Oh, I could do a whole podcast on spreadsheets. And then the third category is your like extras. So it's, those are kind of the ones that we can play with, right? They're shopping, they're Netflix, they're eating out, donations, gifts, etc. That's the area that we have to play with, where if you can try to pull the purse strings a little bit, same with groceries. If normally you're spending $350, what if you just try to bring it down to $300 a month, whatever it may be, and try to pull the purse strings a little bit so that you have some money to start investing. That's how I recommend kind of starting with the budget. And what you mentioned earlier about starting to save for the summer camps at Christmas time, that's what we call sinking funds. So that's kind of what you would have for, I have an emergency sinking fund, a vacation sinking fund. Again, if you have kids or education sinking funds. So that's where, instead of, if you know you're going to have a big bill in August for something, or you don't know when your car is going to break down, you want to be saving every month a little bit for when that happens. So you don't have to rack up a credit card bill for an emergency situation. Or you don't have to stress out in August when the kids want to go to camp and potentially have to tell them no, because you haven't been planning for it. So sinking funds are every month, put in $50 to an emergency fund, or $100 into, you know, vacation fund. I'm a big international traveler, so I try to put in a couple hundred dollars every month so I can go on a couple trips every year and not have to worry about it because I've been planning. So that's really important as well. And put that money, we'll talk about this later, put that money in a high yield savings account. Free money, we'll get there later.
I really like that, and I have a question around it. So mm-hmm. I've just been, you know, trying to put a little bit of money into a savings account every month. And yes, we'll talk about this high yield and other things later. But do you do it where you specifically have like travel fixed? Do you have multiple savings accounts, and one is for travel and one is for car? Because I will say that with the big savings account, then I feel like I can't touch it, because now I'm like, mm-hmm. Well, what is that for? Well, it's for savings. And I have my own weird things around my account, and I think I'm less likely to help myself. I'll still freak out if my car breaks down because that's the special savings account, but I guess I need to look at that differently, right? Or do you have specific savings accounts?
No, it is just one savings account, and that can get a little complicated because it's just one big bucket that's technically supposed to be for several different categories, right? And if you want to separate them out, you totally can as well if it's easier for you. I just definitely prefer simplicity in all aspects of life. So mine is just one account. And I just know, again, spreadsheets, I try to balance all of my expenses and savings every month. So I know January through April, I've been putting in $100 into this account. And then when I get a bill in May for $400, I know that I have those $400. And same with a vacation. You know, if I ended up looking at a vacation and it's going to cost me $2,200, I know I've been putting $200 a month in for all year. So I can afford that. So it's kind of, again, if you're like keeping track of what you're putting into your savings, it's not as stressful to use it. But I totally get the apprehension, and it's a good apprehension, right? We don't want to touch our savings unless we need to, but it also requires this balance of living a beautiful life while planning for the future.
I love that. Yeah. I need to look at my bucket differently and maybe get a little more goal oriented, and maybe that would help. Cause you were like, if you know you're doing this $2,200 vacation, then it's going to feel good to pull it out.
Yeah.
I think I need to get more goal oriented. Thank you for helping
me realize
that today.
Oh, I'm so happy to help.
So I know there are so many different ways to invest. How did you find your chosen path of investing? Why does it feel good?
Yeah. Again, Kelly was a huge inspiration. She recommended the book to me. It's called The Simple Path to Wealth by J.L. Collins. It is the holy grail of investing advice. I tell everybody to go read that. I've read it probably 3 times. I do recommend the physical version or a visual, like a Kindle, rather than audio, because he does have a lot of graphs and charts and stuff that I'm a visual learner. So that helps a lot seeing it. But that book is really, really great. And it's literally makes it so simple. It's called The Simple Path to Wealth. And it breaks it down into like how to get out of debt, what to start investing, where to start investing, how to change it as you age, et cetera, et cetera. So highly recommend that book. And then I kind of break this down into, you'll notice that I'm a big list person. So I break things down into steps and everything. The first thing with investing is you need to know what your situation is, right? Like, what are your priorities? If you want to be a risky investor or if you want to be a safe, stable investor, I stick with the S's. What are they? Stable, safe, simple, and successful. Those are my goals in investing. And I'll get into what I've chosen with those goals later. But the other thing that you need to factor in is how long you have to invest, right? So if you're in your 50s or 60s or however old you are, and you want to start accessing that money soon, you need to be investing a little different than I am in my 30s or somebody in their 20s would be investing. The amount of risk that you can face is different based on timing. So those are the kind of the two factors you need to consider within your life and your goals. The second step is where to invest. There's 4 accounts that they recommend, and they recommend going in this order. The first one is your 401k, especially if you get employer matching. Do that immediately. That's free money. Your employer's paying you extra. Do your 401k. And if you can max it out every year, it does have an annual maximum. Layman's term, a 401k is a retirement account. Normally it is sponsored through a employer. And these are all US based accounts. So most of this advice is for our American audience. but a 401k, if you can max it out every year, that is wild, like incredible. It's currently, the maximum is $23,000 a year. So the last few years I've been maxing out mine, and it's every year the maximum goes up. So I've been doing a little bit less than 23,000 every year, but if you can get to that, that is amazing. So max out your 401k is the first step. The second one is IRAs, which is another retirement account. I don't even know what these all stand for, if we're being honest. Independent retirement account. I don't even know. I just know what they do. So the IRA is the next step. There is currently a $7,000 limit on that. And these are both tax advantage accounts. So with the IRA and specifically, you can either do a traditional IRA or a Roth IRA. And the difference is with a traditional, you're not paying your taxes now. So it's tax-free money that you put into this retirement account. But when you withdraw the money and as it grows, you're going to be paying taxes on it, right? So you can choose, it's kind of a little bit of a gamble of how much you think you're going to be taxed right now, what tax bracket you're in right now versus what you will be when you plan on retiring and accessing that money. So there's benefits to both traditional and Roth. The Roth is pay your taxes now, and then you're never taxed again on it. All the money, all the growth that it has in the future, you're never going to pay taxes. So when you withdraw the money, it's completely yours. I have chosen to balance between the two, a traditional and Roth, but I do weigh more heavily in the Roth because if you can get the taxes out of the way right now when I know I can afford them, that's really beneficial. And all of the growth in the future is no longer taxed, so you don't even have to think about it. So I personally do both traditional and Roth IRA. I just alternate years of that 7,000 limit. But I weigh more heavily on the Roth. Now, some 401ks also have the Roth option. Mine did with my employer. And so I was doing that as well, Roth 401k. So you can look into that with your employer. So those are the first 2 steps, 401k, IRA. The third one, which I've never been able to do, is an HSA, a health savings account, which those are normally sponsored through employers as well. I'm actually not sure if you can get them independently. I should look into that. But it's basically that you can put in tax-free money. Again, we're trying to prioritize any tax advantages. Tax-free money into a health savings account, which you can use anytime throughout your life. So I can put in money right now and I can use it when I'm 85 and I'm in the retirement home plan checkers. But it will never be taxed. So that is the only account that is literally never taxed. And you know that you will need medical expenses. Everybody is going to need medical treatment. You can use it on your dental care, on your contacts, on whatever it may be, health associated. So HSA, zero taxes. Amazing. Amazing account. And the fourth is a brokerage account. The reason that's fourth is there's no tax advantages to it, but it is similar to an IRA or a 401k that you're investing your money in stocks or bonds, whatever you choose. But the brokerage account is basically just a savings account that is invested in stocks rather than in the bank, not making
and
good
do
interest.
You have a brokerage account?
I do. Yep. Yep. Because they're... I was maxing out my 401k and my IRA. And so beyond that, any additional money would go into my brokerage account every year.
And do you get to choose where it's invested or how it's invested?
Yep, correct. Okay, so that brings me to the third decision. The third step in investing is figuring out what you are investing in with those accounts. So with all of those accounts, you can kind of invest in the same thing. Again, I chose stable, simple, successful. And for me, that was index funds. So an index fund is an investment in the entire stock market, essentially the entire stock market. So instead of having to choose, I think Apple's going to go big this year, or I think this mom and pop shop is really going to hit it this year. You're investing in, I think it's 3,700. It's a little over 3,700 companies within the United States. Again, you can go international, but let's just focus on the states. Index funds in history have just been the most successful option. So if you look into the professional investors, these advisors, the people that you can pay to make your money grow, they only outperform index funds less than 10%. Some people say it's even 1% of people actually outperform index funds by like trying to pick and choose individual stocks and play the day trading game, right? That is super risky. It takes a lot of time because you have to do all your research. It's not successful over time. Index funds over time, our country has always grown, right? If you look at a specific month or even a year or a day or hour, you might be dipping. You might be losing money. I've lost money quite a bit, but it over time always grows. And so index funds, the game that you have to play, and you have to be committed to riding the wave because it does wave. And they actually recommend not looking. Like, don't look at your investments. I look at them once a quarter just for my spreadsheet's sake, and I put the numbers in my spreadsheet. But don't look, because this is a long-term game, right? So just ride out the market, whatever is happening in the country. Sometimes it's going to go down. Last year, my investments, they try to say, don't ever say you lost money, because the only way you're losing money is if you take
it out.
Yep. If you freak out and you withdraw all your money, that is the only way that you can lose money. If you just stick it out and ride it out, it will rise again. So last year when I looked, I had gone down $16,000, which is painful. My dad even used the example, I think it was in the 2008 crash, that he said in 1 year he lost $200,000. But it comes back, right? It always comes back. So you just have to sit there and bite your tongue. And the last time I checked, I was up, what was it, $36,000 or something. So it just keeps... Yeah, I know. And I know, no. It's super, super exciting. But that's the thing with index funds. They typically yield, I think the stats is 8 to 12% annual income, which is incredible, right? A bank account is less than 1%. So don't leave your money in a bank account. A high yield savings account, which we'll talk about later again, is right now it's between 4 and 5%, which is incredible, but not as good as these investments at 8 to 12%. So if you can get your money in there working while you sleep, that's the way to go.
Awesome. So I know that I haven't started investing yet because it feels like I need, 10K in savings and then 20K to invest. I mean, I'm making up random obsolete numbers here because I'm really not even sure. I just know I'm, you know, just in case the emergency fund, right? So how much should someone truly have in their emergency fund, their just in case? And then when can they start playing and actually investing and put some money into an index fund, for example?
Yeah, totally. There's kind of the three steps that I would say in that category as well. The first is, yeah, making sure you have that emergency fund. They say 3 to 6 months. So if you lose your job, if you get injured and you can't work, whatever it may be, have saved up 3 to 6 months worth of living expenses, which we identified in creating a budget in the first topic, right? So make that budget, figure out what your life costs every month, and then save 3 to 6 months of that money in a high yield savings account. That's the first step. Always have an emergency fund. The second one is to get out of debt, which I know you talked about and you've like smashed out getting out of debt. Amazing. Incredible. Incredible. There's so many people living in a lot of debt right now. And that's the first priority to get out of is any high interest debt. They do say if your interest is less than 3%, then just make the minimum payments and prioritize investing over paying off your debt quickly. But if your debt is like 3 to 5 or anything over 5% interest, pay that off immediately before investing. So it kind of depends on what kind of debt you have. Again, there's all obviously the different like a home mortgage, student loans, that kind of stuff that can kind of be a little bit different categories. but as a general rule, if it's under 5%, just do minimum payments and prioritize investing. If it's over, pay that off. And always start, it's easy. I think a lot of people like to start with paying off the smallest debt first, just to like tick stuff off. But no, you need to pay off the highest interest debt first, even if it's the bigger account. So stop paying interest. As you have mentioned earlier, it kills you. Stop paying interest.
I mean, you're talking about low numbers, you know, 5%, 8%, but I think my credit card was 17%,
yep,
you know?
Yep,
and
yep.
I think mine now, they're 21%. It's insane how quick those can increase if you just leave yep. money sitting there.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. You're throwing money away for sure. So get those paid off. And again, like if we go back to index funds are making you 8 to 12%, that's priority, right? You want to be making that money rather than paying off minimal little debts. So the third step, of course, is the investment. Now, investing. Now, it is a common question of like, oh, I feel like I need so much money to start investing. No, you absolutely do not. Some people, like if you can put in $20 a month, bravo, I'm clapping for you over here. Like incredible. Do anything that you can. Now, with the specific accounts that I have been using with Vanguard is a big, how do you explain it? So Vanguard is basically the bank, and then you create your IRA account or your brokerage account through Vanguard. With both of those accounts, I think you need to have a minimum of $3,000 in your account before you can buy stocks. So there is a little bit of a barrier to entry there that you have to have $3,000. But prioritize getting to that $3,000. You know, if you get your tax return, dump it in. If you get an annual bonus, dump it in. If you get a, you know, Christmas check from your grandma, dump it in. Get to $3,000 and then that money will start working for you. And then at that point, if you can only do $20 a month, great. Like do what you can.
So all of that being said, how has investing impacted your financial standing both now and in the future, if you don't mind sharing?
Yeah. Mainly confidence. Like I just feel like I have backup if I need it. Of course, the goal is to never have to touch my investments, but it's there. And I know, for example, horrible example, I got laid off in October. I had been at this amazing job for 9 years. They ended up doing a massive layoff and I got the cut. So I was unemployed. And that is so stressful to a lot of people. And for me, I actually was able to see it kind of as an opportunity of I can try something new. You know, I have savings if I need it. I have that 3 to 6 month emergency fund to back up if I need it. And so I've started doing a freelancing job. I'm a business creator or whatever you want to call me, that I'm doing freelance marketing now, and I don't have the support of an employer or anything. And I feel like I was able to take that risk. And, you know, I'm currently muddling through a bit of financial instability, but I can do that because I have been preparing for this type of situation.
Absolutely. and you think so much, you've thought so much, you've prepared, you've thought so much about your budget, you're able to adjust. That's really cool that you're able to look at it like an opportunity. I know a lot of people would see the muddle as just sometimes like end of world type of situation.
Right. Yeah. And panic and try to get another job and then not be happy with the job they're in. And it can kind of be a snowball effect that you have to switch jobs so many times until you find a good one because you're like in desperation mode. But yeah, having that preparedness is priceless, ironically.
Totally.
But it's also impacted my future in a huge way. That when I was doing the maxing out 401k and IRA and everything, I was on track to be financially independent at 42, which is about 6 years away. So I had the mindset that I only had to work for another 6 years. And from then on, obviously you can continue working if you want to, you can volunteer or do passion projects, or, you know, I've always wanted to work at a bakery decorating cakes, and I could do that for the rest of my life. You know, I don't have to work for money at that point. But they say to achieve financial independence, the movement right now, or the program that people are following, is called FIRE. And that's what I say, I'm a FIRE investment, which stands for financial independence, retire early. And it's meant to be like aggressive investing. So I was investing over 60% of my income. Again, this lifestyle contributed to being able to do that. I don't have rent. I don't have utilities. You know, I am living much more frugally than most people. So I was able to invest aggressively for 3 solid years. I had started about in the fall of 2020. And then I've kind of temporarily stopped until I figure out my job situation. But in the fall of 2023. And in those 3 years, I grew almost $200,000. So that's very significant. And even while I'm not continuing to invest right now, that is continuing to grow. I checked since early October to end of March, so the 6 month period, my investments grew almost $40,000 without me doing a single thing. So it's really, really powerful. And it's really great to have that as the backup and the peace of mind that I know that's still growing. I want to contribute to it when I can now, but if life events happen, there can be some flexibility. And they do say that you can retire or achieve financial independence when you can live off 4% of your savings. So what are the numbers with that? Like if you want to have $30,000 a year to live off of, which is kind of small, but depending on your life situation, if you own a house, whatever, $30,000, you only have to have $750,000 saved up, because the interest is going to be more than what you're spending every year, right? So that's your safe figure. If you want to live off $60,000 a year, it's $1.5 million. If you want to live off $100,000, it's $2.5 million. So you need to figure out what you want your income, quote unquote income, to be during retirement, and make that 4% of your total investment goal. If that makes sense. Does that make sense?
Cool. I have never heard that before. I was this many days old when I heard that. That's awesome.
Excellent. Yeah, it's the safest. It's the safest number. They've calculated that your interest is almost 100% guaranteed. Say 98% guaranteed, shot in the dark, that your interest will be more than how much you're withdrawing at that point.
So I'm sold. What is the process of getting started? Where does someone begin?
Yeah, great question. And honestly, it's so easy. So many people get scared with how to get started and where to get started. And that is the big barrier of entry. But let's take a breath and let's walk through it. It's super, super easy. So I'm sure you have set up a bank account. Most people in their lives have had to set up a bank account that is similar to what you have to do to set up an investment account. So again, I have chosen Vanguard. There's several really, really good options. You may have heard of Fidelity or Charles Schwab, kind of the big names in the investment industry. Vanguard is really great. There is no fees for setting it up or running it every year, so it is virtually free. But you set up an account with them. You do actually have to like print out paperwork and go and get it notarized. So there is a little barrier, but you can do it. Go and get the paperwork notarized, mail it in, and then you'll hear back from them in a week or two. I think they say two, but mine was less than that, that your account has been approved. So they just need to verify your identity and all that kind of stuff. And once your account is approved, you can choose what kind of account you want in Vanguard. So again, Vanguard is the bank. It's similar to US Bank or American Express, or I don't even know banks, but it is the foundation, I guess. And then within it, you can set up those accounts we talked about. You can set up a Roth IRA or a traditional IRA, and you can set up your brokerage account. And within those, that's when you can start just transferring money. Again, we've all done bank transfers. You can either do it from your bank and say, hey, bank, send Vanguard X amount of monies every month, or, which I do it the opposite way, is I go into Vanguard and I say, hey, Vanguard, withdraw X amount of money from my bank account. And this is key, is to pay your future self before you pay your present self. So I had it set up literally the day I got my paycheck from my employer. The day after that, just for safety's sake, I had Vanguard withdraw my investments. So it was never my money. It was never in my pocket. I couldn't touch it. It was automatically invested. That's future Brenda's money. But you can have it set up to just auto withdraw, so you don't have to think about a thing. And once you have that $3,000 minimum that you can have it invested in stocks, you can set those transfers to auto invest as well. So not only is it taking $20, doesn't matter, $20 a month from your banking account into Vanguard, it's also investing that $20 into the stocks. So it's just auto transfer, one and done, you're set up forevermore. I will say, and people do talk about that, the interface, the website for Vanguard and Fidelity and all of that, it's not incredibly user-friendly. However, their customer service is amazing. Like, I called them and within 20 minutes, they had everything. They had answered all my questions. I had everything set up. I had the auto transfer set up. They told me, you know, how to click around so I would know in the future how to check my balances and everything. So if you get stuck at all with Vanguard, give them a call. They're amazing. But it's so easy. Fill out the paperwork, mail it in, start the transfers. The other thing, once you get your Vanguard account set up and you've got that $3,000 in, and this is a common step that people forget, so listen, like, put your big ears up. don't forget to actually invest the money. So your IRA is just an account. It's just a bank account, essentially, until you choose what stocks to invest in those index funds. So make sure you take that extra step. Don't just leave your money sitting in the IRA and think, oh, I'm doing such a great job. You have to choose your stocks. And the index fund that I recommend is the Vanguard Total Market Index Fund. So its ticker is VTSAX. And that, I'm almost fully invested in that. It's all the, again, all of the domestic stocks in the US market. If you want to diversify at all into international, just for, again, diversifying is a smart thing to do, just to, as backup. Vanguard also has an international account. It's VTIAX. And I think I've chosen 10% in the international fund, but 90% in the domestic fund. So make sure with both the IRA and the brokerage account and your 401k, don't just put money in. Actually choose the stocks that you're investing in.
Okay, you just blew my mind a little bit, so I have a clarifying question.
Yep.
So you had said put the money in the IRA. So the money that you put into the IRA can also go into the index fund.
So the IRA
it can
just
go
the
into
account.
The brokerage. Just the account.
Nope.
But those monies can be invested.
Correct. Okay. So the IRA and the brokerage account are just accounts. They're the same as saying I have a checking account or I have a savings account. They're just a place to put money. You have to make sure that the money in there is invested. So once the money is in there, you then say, invest this money in the stocks. So that's where, if you choose to do the day trading or whatever you want to do, and you want to say, I want to invest in McDonald's, you can go look up McDonald's trade ticker, whatever their symbol is, and go choose to invest in McDonald's. Or you can choose to invest in the entire stock market, the VTSAX, and you then have to set that up to buy those stocks. And you can, again, it's a one and done. You set it up to auto buy with every deposit that you put in, that $20 a month or $100 or $1,000 a month, whatever you can put in, auto deposit and auto invest.
But the IRA can be invested. That $7,000 a year can be invested, and then you create the brokerage account if you can do more than $7,000, and that can also get invested. So it's two
Correct.
Separate accounts that are like actually invested in the market.
Beautiful. Correct. Yes. Yes. So start with the IRA.
I understand. Get that
tax, amazing. Get that tax advantage with the IRA up to $7,000. Invest it. You can also choose if you want to invest the dividends. So the dividends is essentially the interest you're getting, the money that you're getting. So if you want to be paid out the dividends, you can choose that. Again, it won't grow as quickly, but you can choose to auto invest all of your deposits and all of your dividends, and that is going to grow. But max out your IRA, get that tax advantage. Again, if you choose to do the traditional where you are not taxed now, but you're taxed later, or the Roth where you're taxed now and not later, that is a choice you can make. But those are both IRAs. You can only do one each year, but you can alternate different years, $7,000. And then once that's maxed out, then you start your brokerage account. And again, make sure that that is invested in your stocks as well. Does that make sense?
Totally. Thank you.
Oh, amazing. Amazing. And yeah, if anybody has any questions, like, message me. I am happy to help at least share what is working for me.
Awesome. And 3K is all you need. I was thinking some ambiguous, you know, number that wasn't real. I'm glad we're having this conversation. You've been telling us about investments that are used 5+ years in the future, but then you also were mentioning high yield savings accounts and those things. If someone wants to use their money in a shorter period of time, what do those investments look like?
Mm-hmm. So a high yield savings account is essentially free money. And depending on the economy and how all of the, who knows, politics, science, all of that stuff is going, the APY, it's called annual percentage yield.
I've seen that acronym on some of my paperwork and never known what it meant, and never looked into it.
Yeah. It's basically how much you're getting paid per year, how much your money is paying you, basically. So that can differ. I think a couple years ago, it was quite low. Right now, it's between 4% and 5%. So you're getting every month, again, put your emergency funds in it, put your sinking funds for your kids' summer camp, put all of that money in your high yield savings account, and it will be making you money. I'm making almost $100 a month just on having money in an account. So it's super simple. I just literally Googled best high yield savings account 2024, and the acronym is HYSA. If you see that written anywhere, HYSA, high yield savings account. And several different accounts come up. A lot of them, the names weren't familiar to me, but that doesn't mean they're bad. You know, do your research, go figure out which account maybe sounds best to you. I chose to go with American Express because I already have a rewards credit card with American Express, so I didn't have to do any paperwork with them. It was just easy that I just made it a different account with them and started dumping my money. And then again, if you can combine banks like that, I just pay off my credit card through my high yield savings account directly. So there's no middleman there. But it is phenomenal. And I think it's probably the easiest step, the least barrier to entry. If you don't invest, at least get a high yield savings account, because your money can be making you money.
Make some free money.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But like, as you mentioned, the general rule is if you want to touch the money in the next 5 years, keep it fluid in that high yield savings account. If you don't plan on touching it for 5 years or more, invest it and start getting that 8% to 12% instead of the 5%.
Absolutely. I feel like I've learned a lot today. My head's spinning a little bit, and I feel like for myself, I have two places I'm going to begin. So I really appreciate you sitting down with us today.
Amazing.
I'm going to be getting the high yield savings account. I have, right when you said American Express, I was like, easy peasy. I've got that credit card.
Yep. It's so easy.
I can do that. And then I'm going to do the Vanguard and just start throwing a little bit of money in there until I hit the 3K. And that brokerage thing just sounds fun. It sounds a little bit like a game, and I'll play the safe game.
Start with the IRA though, because that has the tax advantage. So do an IRA before your brokerage account. But if you end up putting more than $7,000 a year, and you can't, like, don't, because then your taxes get complicated. Don't put more than $7,000 a year in your IRA. At that point, open the brokerage account and play games.
Can you only have a 401k if you have a traditional job? Like, not if you're an independent contractor?
No, you can get them independently, I believe. I need to look into it because now I am in that category. Again, there's a lot of things that I didn't know because I was just doing what was working for me at the time. And now that my life situations have changed, I need to research different options. But I believe you can do a standalone or an independent 401k or something, but something to research.
Something research. There always is, yeah. But I so much appreciate at least giving me this like jumping off point. I feel like I have some places to go and I'm definitely getting that book. So I really appreciate you sitting down with us today and helping, especially some of us women who I didn't feel capable in this realm, feel a little bit more capable. I really appreciate it.
Oh, I'm so glad. I'm so glad. That makes my heart really happy. And I hope, again, I hope I'm steering you in the right direction. If you have any questions, what I recommend is, yes, reading that book, but also like start following accounts online that can start trickling in knowledge and you can start learning the lingo and it won't sound so intimidating, all these acronyms and account names and blah, blah, blah. A couple accounts that I really like is Her First 100K on Instagram. Her First, then the numbers 100K. And then there's also Delianne the Money Coach. Delianne the Money Coach. I post about these on my Instagram as well a lot. So if you want to follow me, you can look up those accounts as well when I share them. But if you start following those, they're both women. So I love seeing women financial geniuses and learning from them.
And again, Brenda is the road through my eyes. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is a Tiny Home Tours production. Thank you so much for listening. Please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe for all future episodes. We'll see you next week.